Thanks for listening to our podcast. We've got more information and additional resources at probe.org/podcast. And be sure to check out our life-changing Summer Mind Games Camp for high school and college students.
It's a parallel that has probably been beaten to death, but Kirby Anderson brings some new eyes comparing Rome and America here on Probe.
The philosopher George Santayana once said, "Those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it," to which I might add that those who remember Santayana's maxim also seem condemned to repeat the phrase. Ask anyone if they see similarities between Rome and America, and they are likely to respond with a resounding yes. But I have also found that people who see similarities between Rome and America see different similarities. Some see similarities in our moral decay. Others see similarities in pride, arrogance, and hubris. But all seem to agree that we are repeating the past mistakes and need to change our ways. In his book, Are We Rome?, Cullen Murphy argues that there are many similarities between the Roman Empire and America, but he also believes that American national character couldn't be more different from Rome. He believes these differences can help us avoid Rome's fate. Let's begin by looking at some of the political, geographical, and demographic similarities. Number one, dominant powers. Rome and America are the most powerful actors in their world by many orders of magnitude. Their power includes both military might and the soft power of language, culture, commerce, technology, and ideas. Number two, approximately equal in size. Rome and America are comparable in physical size. The Roman Empire and its Mediterranean lake would fit inside the 3 million square miles of the lower 48 states without much room to spare. Number three, global influence. Both Rome and America created global structures, administrative, economic, military, cultural, that the rest of the world and their own citizens came to take for granted as gravity and photosynthesis are taken for granted. Number four, open society. Both are societies made up of many peoples, open to newcomers, willing to absorb the genes and lifestyles and gods of everyone else, and to grant citizenship to incoming tribes from all corners of the earth. Number five, culturally similar. Romans and Americans can't get enough of laws and lawyers and lawsuits. They actually relished the ritual humiliation of public figures. Americans through comedy, satire, talk radio, and court TV. The Romans through vicious satire, to be sure, but also during the Republic by means of censoria nota, the public airing, name by name, of everything great men of the time should be ashamed of. Number six, chosen people. Both see themselves as chosen people and both see their national character as exceptional. While there are many similarities, there are also profound differences between Rome and America. And before we look at the six major parallels, we'll look tomorrow at some of the differences.
This has been Probe with your host, Kirby Anderson. To get your free copy of Kirby's transcript, Rome and America, visit us at probe.org. Again, that's probe.org. And join us next time here on Probe.
It is no real surprise that people from different political and religious perspectives see similarities between Rome and America. While some see similarities in moral decay, others see it in military might or political corruption. Although there are similarities between Rome and America, there are some very notable differences. Cullen Murphy points these out in his book. Number one, technological advancement. Rome, in all its long history, never left the Iron Age, whereas America, in its short history, has already leapt through the Industrial Age to the Information Age and the Biotech Age. Number two, abundance. Wealthy as it was, Rome lived close to the edge. Many regions were one dry spell away from famine. America enjoys an economy of abundance, even surfeit. It must beware of the diseases of overindulgence. Number three, slavery. Rome was always a slave-holding polity with the profound moral and social retardation that this implies. America started out as a slave-holding polity and decisively cast slavery aside. Number four, government. Rome emerged out of a city-state and took centuries to let go of a city-state's method of governance. America, from early on, began to administer itself as a continental power. Number five, social classes. Rome had no middle class as we understand the term, whereas the American middle class is the core social fact. Number six, democracy. Rome had a powerful but tiny aristocracy and entrenched ideas about a social pecking order, even at its most democratic. Rome was not remotely as democratic as America was in its least democratic under a British monarch. Number 7, entrepreneurship. Rome looked down upon entrepreneurship, while Americans hold it in high esteem. Number 8, economic dynamism. Rome was economically static. America is economically transformative. Number 9, technological development. For all its engineering skills, Rome generated few original ideas in science and technology. America is a hothouse of innovation and creativity. And number 10, social equality. On basic matters such as gender roles and the equality of all people, Romans and Americans would behold one another with disbelief and distaste. While it is true that Rome and America have vast number of similarities, we can also see that there are significant differences between the two. We therefore need a nuanced view of the parallels between the two civilizations and recognize that these differences may be an important key in understanding the future of the United States. In his book, Are We Rome?, Cullen Murphy sees many parallels between the Roman Empire and America. We've already discussed some of the similarities and differences between the two. The following are larger, more extensive parallels between Rome and America. The first parallel is perspective. It actually involves the way Americans see America, and more to the point, the way the tiny elite subset of Americans who live in the nation's capital see America and see Washington itself. Like the Romans, Americans tend to see themselves as more important than they are. They tend to have an exaggerated sense of their own presence in the world and its ability to act alone. A second parallel involves military power. Although there are differences, some similarities stand out. Both Rome and America start to run short of people to sustain their militaries and begin to find recruits through outside sources. This is not a good long-run solution. A third parallel can be lumped under the term privatization. Rome had trouble maintaining a distinction between the public and private responsibilities. America is currently in the midst of privatizing functions that used to be public tasks. A fourth parallel concerns the way Rome and America view the outside world. In a sense, this is the flip side of the first parallel. If you believe your country is exceptional, you tend to devalue others. And more importantly, you tend to underestimate other nations' capabilities. Rome learned this in AD 9 when 3 legions were ambushed by a small German force and annihilated. The repercussions were significant. The question of borders is a fifth parallel. The boundary of Rome was less a fence and more of a threshold. Not so much a firm line fortified with keep-out signs as much a permeable zone of continued interaction. Compare that description to our border with Mexico, and you can see many similarities. A final parallel has to do with the size and complexity of the nations. The Roman Empire got too big physically and too complex to manage effectively. The larger a country or civilization, the more it touches, and the more susceptible it is to forces beyond its control. To use a phrase by Murphy, bureaucracy is the new geography. Cullen Murphy concludes his book by calling for greater citizen involvement and for us to promote a sense of community and mutual obligation. The Roman historian Livy wrote, "An empire remains powerful so long as its subjects rejoice in it." America is not beyond repair, but it needs to learn the lessons from the Roman Empire. What about the moral decline of Rome? Do we see parallels in America? I've addressed this in previous programs on a decline of a nation and when nations fall. Let's today focus on the area of sexuality, marriage, and family. In his 1934 book, Sex and Culture, British anthropologist Joseph Daniel Unwin chronicled the historic decline of numerous cultures, including the Roman Empire. He found that cultures that held to a strong sexual ethic thrived and were more productive than cultures that were sexually free. In his book, Our Dance Has Turned to Death, Carl Wilson identifies the common pattern of family decline in civilizations like the Roman Empire. It is significant how these 7 stages parallel what is happening in America. In the first stage, men ceased to lead their families in worship. Spiritual and moral development became secondary. Their view of God became naturalistic, mathematical, and mechanical. In the second stage, men selfishly neglected care of their wives and children to pursue material wealth, political and military power, and cultural development. Material values began to dominate thought. The third stage involved a change in men's sexual values. Men who were preoccupied with business or war either neglected their wives sexually or became involved with lower class women or with homosexuality. Ultimately, a double standard of morality developed. The fourth stage affected women. The role of women at home and with children lost value and status. Women were neglected and their roles devalued. Soon they revolted to gain access to material wealth and also freedom for sex outside of marriage. Women also began to minimize having sexual relations to conceive children, and the emphasis became sex for pleasure. In the fifth stage, husband and wives competed against each other for money, home leadership, and the affection of their children. This resulted in hostility and frustration and possible homosexuality in the children. Many marriages ended in separation and divorce. In the sixth stage, selfish individualism grew and carried over into society, fragmenting it into smaller and smaller group loyalties. The nation was thus weakened by internal conflict. The decrease in the birth rate produced an older population that had less ability to defend itself and less will to do so, making the nation more vulnerable to its enemies. And finally, unbelief in God became more complete. Parental authority diminished, and ethical and moral principles disappeared, affecting the economy and the government. These are the stages we see playing out in the decline of the Roman Empire, but we can also see them happening before our eyes in America. What about the spiritual decline in Rome and America? We can actually read about the spiritual decline in Rome in Paul's letter to the church in Rome. In the opening chapter, he traces a progression of spiritual decline that was evident in the Hellenistic world of his time. The first stage is when people turn from God to idolatry. Although God has revealed himself in nature to all men so that they are without excuse, they nevertheless worship the creation rather than the Creator. This is idolatry. In the past, this took the form of actual idol worship. In our day, it takes the form of worship of money or the worship of self. In either case, it is idolatry. A further example of this is a general lack of thankfulness. Although they were prospered by God, they were ungrateful. And when they were no longer looking to God for wisdom and guidance, they became vain and futile and empty in their imaginations. They no longer honor God, so their foolish hearts become darkened. In professing to be wise, they have become fools. The second stage is when men and women exchange their natural use of sex for unnatural uses. Here, Paul uses those four sobering words, God gave them over. In a society where lust-driven sensuality and sexual perversion dominate, God gives them over to their degrading passions and unnatural desires. The third stage is anarchy. Once a society has rejected God's revelation, it's on its own. Moral and social anarchy is the natural result. At this point, God has given the sinners over to a depraved mind, and so they do things which are not proper. This results in a society which is without understanding, untrustworthy, unloving, and unmerciful. And the final stage is judgment. God's judgment rightly falls upon those who practice idolatry and immorality. Certainly an eternal judgment awaits those who are guilty, but a social judgment occurs when God gives a nation over to its sinful practices. Notice that this progression is not unique to the Hellenistic world the Apostle Paul was living in. The progression from idolatry to sexual perversion to anarchy to judgment is found throughout history. In the times of Noah and Lot, there was idolatry of greed, there was sexual perversion and promiscuity, there was anarchy and violence, and finally there was judgment. Throughout the history of the nation of Israel, there was idolatry, sexual perversion, anarchy, and finally judgment. Are there parallels between Rome and America? I have quoted this week from secular authors, Christian authors, and a writer of much of the New Testament. All seem to point to parallels between Rome and America.